And it's time once again for Radio Naturopath. I'm here with Ron. It's very exciting. And it is, it's Wednesday, June 29th, 2016.
Wow. That happened fast.
I know. And it's going to be 4th of July weekend this weekend. Very exciting.
Right. And we have really long days and lots of light.
Yeah.
It's really kind of an exciting time of year.
You can be outside for a long time. It's really quite lovely. So, we've got some nice stuff for you today. A lot of information for you. And we would also like to invite you to participate. I would like to answer some of your questions. So the number to call, this is technically a call-in show, and I'm supposed to be answering your questions. So I would like you to participate and ask me questions. The number to call is 860-486-9487. The phone is sitting right there next to Ron waiting for him to pick up and answer your questions. That's 860-486-9487.
And I'm right here next to the phone.
Yes, and you can email us at radionaturopath@gmail.com, and you can also text us at that same number, 860-486-9487. I've got a program that I can look at, and it's right on my computer screen, and I can see your text. So how cool is that?
And if you're listening to us on a podcast at a later date, which is being broadcast to you, you can also, how can you reach us then, Fran?
Well, if you wanted to reach us because you just had to, then you could simply write us at radionaturopath@gmail.com. And I would get that any time, so I could contact you back, and I could answer your questions on the air. So if you think of a question while you're in the shower, which is your most brilliant ideas happen in the shower.
I'm confused. Do you listen to podcasts in the shower?
It's not unheard of. It's not out of the question. I mean, you can get radios that are waterproof.
Well, I guess you can.
Broadcasting into the bathroom. Why not?
Sure. Or you could have it on really loud. And
there
you
are
hear
all
it.
Manner of things that go
right.
on.
So it
can happen. So look at my arm. Isn't it cool?
Yeah, your arm is like all very taped up.
Yeah.
Because you did something to it.
Yeah, I did something to it.
Yeah.
So I have golfer's elbow.
Yeah, that's because you play all those rounds of golf.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? I thought it was really funny. I decided I got my epicondyle confused with my malleolus. The malleolus.
Here we go.
So if you want to know what a malleolus is.
You should explain.
So a mali, that word in Greek or Latin, has to do with a hammer. So anything that has mali is going to have a hammer-like shape. So it's probably coming from the Greek. Anyway, you have malleoli in your foot. If you reach down and touch your foot, on either side of your ankle, you're going to find there's a bump. There's a nice bump right on the side, the outside of your ankle and the inside of your ankle. The outside is called the lateral malleolus, and the right side inside is called the medial malleolus. Then, if you go up to your arm and you, so I know you're all going to do this, right, while you're listening to me. Stick out your arm, not if you're driving, stick out your arm so that the palm is facing up and stick it out in front of you. So, on either side of your elbow, there are bumps. Okay, so this is not funny, but the bone that goes from your shoulder to your elbow is called your humerus. Anyway, so this very humerus bone has little bumps on either side of it, and those little bumps are very convenient for attaching muscles and tendons too. So the bump that sticks out on the left side of your elbow is called an epicondyle. It is the lateral epicondyle. So let me explain medial and lateral. So if you draw a line from the top of your head, from the very top of your head, the vertex, down the very center of your body, that line is called the midline. So if you're on the midline and you travel away from the midline towards the side of your body, that's called lateral. If you are on the side of your body and you travel toward the midline, that's called medial. So anything that's closer to the midline is going to be medial. Anything that's further from the midline is going to be lateral. So let's stick our arm out again and put your hand on the right bump on your elbow, on the right-hand side, you know, running down the side of your arm bone. Then you got that bump sticking out. That is called the medial epicondyle. Now, if you travel, walk your fingers to the other side and you feel the bump that's on the outside, that is the lateral epicondyle. Now, you can get a condition called epicondylitis. And epicondylitis is not actually an infection of the bone, thank goodness. That would be an osteitis, and that's a very serious condition. But the terms, they call it epicondylitis, even though technically that's the bony prominence where the tendons attach. But it's actually an inflammation of the tendons that attach to that bone, which isn't as serious, but can be quite painful. Well, it can be pretty serious because it can really, it can compromise your activities. So if you have inflammation of the tendons that attach to the medial epicondyle, it's affectionately called golfer's elbow because it's something that afflicts people who play golf because of the way that you swing your golf club. If you get it on the outside bump, the lateral epicondylitis is known as tennis elbow because, you know, those overhead swings, you're going to tend to pull on those tendons in that direction. So I'm lucky enough to have golfer's elbow, even though, you know, the last time I played miniature golf, I don't even remember when that was. So clearly I did not tweak my elbow by playing golf. What I believe that I did was, you know, first of all, if you get a tendonitis or a tendinosis like that, you probably have been tweaking the muscle that's involved for some time anyway. So that was probably going on. I think the initiating event happened in January. I was lifting some weights. I lifted a weight that was a little heavier than I should have been. And I twisted my arm. And it was as simple as that. I was fine 1 minute and then I wasn't. And I was like, oh, man. And so it tweaked it. And, you know, I'm a person who doesn't rest much. So, you know, now it's gotten tweaky. And now, so what happened was I took care of it. I got off it for a little bit. I put cream and stuff on it, and it got better. So now I'm in a place where it gets better and worse. And this weekend, I did a very difficult bike ride, and the bike ride involved a lot of hills. And the hills involved me both supporting my body on the bicycle as well as pulling on the handlebars. And I think that, and there was so much of that, I think that's how I hurt the arm. And then on Monday, I did some weightlifting and that aggravated it further.
So what's that?
Is that like a tendonitis that you have? Is that what you have?
Yes, I have a tendonitis. So there's two interesting terms, tendonitis and tendinosis. So tendonitis specifically, whenever you hear the term itis, that means inflammation. And inflammation means that there's four characteristics of inflammation. Dolor, tumor, rubor, and calor. All right, so you know what dolor is?
No.
Pain. You know what rubor is?
Then I definitely know what dolor is.
Yes, do you know what rubor is?
No.
Redness.
Okay.
You know what calor is?
There was a store used to be called Caldor's.
No. It's heat.
It's heat? Okay.
And tumor.
Don't know.
Is swelling.
Oh, calor, so like calories, like heat.
Yes, comes from the same root. That's okay. Exactly right. So.
And the last one was?
Tumor, which is tumor, swelling.
Which is swelling. Okay.
Yeah, tumor, like a tumor.
Makes sense. Yeah. Makes sense.
So dolor, rubor, tumor, and calor. Those are the four, the Latin four aspects of inflammation.
Okay.
So dolor, the thing definitely hurts. Rubor, well, there's not particular redness right now, but if you looked inside it, there'd probably be, you know, there's going to be more blood cells in the location, but you will sometimes see that an area that's inflamed will turn red.
Right.
Because of the increased circulation to the area.
Sure.
Calor, it's going to get hot because there's increased circulation to the area.
There you go.
And tumor, well, it's going to swell because there's more circulation to the area. So those are the increased circulation to the area and the increased metabolism that's going on in the area is going to cause all of those things, dolor, rubor, tumor, and calor. So dolor because, yeah, dolor is going to happen because when you have inflammation will set off some nerves in the area. And also when you have swelling is going to press on nerves. So you're going to have some pain. And pain is actually, I know people don't like to feel pain, but pain is actually, in some senses, a good thing because it gives you an idea of what's going on. So for me, if I have a condition that's not terribly serious, you know, I always look at it as an opportunity. What am I going to do with this? How am I going to take care of it? How am I going to manage it? So knowing that not too long ago, I had some tweaking because my knees get a little tweaky because I've worked very hard on my knees because I, you know, ride a bike. I taped my knees, and within a couple of days, the taping had done such a wonderful job. I felt so much better. So I said, you know what? We're going to tape this elbow. I think it's a great idea. And, you know, KT Tape is only too happy to show you how to use their tape to tape any part of your body. So there's good information online on how to tape a particular part. Mm-hmm. So I went home and I said, Ron, tape me. So I had already looked up my condition. I said, well, it hurts right here. What is that condition called? I figured out what I have is golfer's elbow or medial epicondylitis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a very specific way you tape for medial epicondylitis, and it makes sense. And what's really lovely about it is you tape right over the painful part in a crosswise fashion, and then you tape all along the tendon that's one of the tendon that's affected. And it's controversial what tape actually does, but certainly it provides support.
Right. Well, physical trainers that are training athletes are big fans of tape.
Well, it seems to work so well. And there are people who are not fans of it at all, who don't
right.
believe that it works
right.
and don't believe that it reduces inflammation. And yet, my experience of it is if I tape a part, first of all, it reduces the pain almost instantly, not 100%. I'm still aware that it's there, but I immediately feel supported. I immediately feel less pain. Like I said, it's not completely gone, but I immediately feel some relief. And
right.
then if I leave the tape on over several days, eventually I do feel, I have felt completely relieved. I mean, we'll see what goes on with this. But I was in a lot of discomfort yesterday. You taped it. I slept with the tape on overnight. This morning, I actually lifted weights. I had to do a lot of modifying to my weight routine so I didn't stress the muscle. I found that anything that required directly supporting myself on the elbow, like I couldn't do push-ups, I couldn't do rows. I could do kettlebell swings with not too much weight. I did, you know, a 15 and 20 pound kettlebell swing. I was able to do those because you're using so much of your upper body and your core that it takes the strain off that actual muscle. So I did more kettlebell swings. I was able to hold myself up in planks because my arms are bent. I'm using my upper body more to support myself, so it didn't affect the muscle as much. But anything that involved that muscle directly, I stayed away from. And so this is another thing. You know, one of the things that you're encouraged to do is range of motion. If you have an injury, you move it as much as you can. That doesn't mean move it hard anyway. That's not what it means. It means you, if you continue to move the part, you're going to increase circulation to the area. And now
okay.
that it's supported with the tape, you have support for the tendons. You have some pressure, which is going to provide some encouragement of the circulation to flow. I think there's something else going on, too. And I have a theory. And I don't know what the PTs would say about this. Some would agree and some wouldn't. But that's that I think you're affecting acupuncture meridians as well.
Oh boy!
Yeah,
here we go.
Yeah, that's what I think you're going.
So when you're doing this movement, is there pain involved, or should you be completely pain free when you're doing that?
You
movement?
Should be as pain free as possible. Mm-hmm. So what I did was, you know, for example, I had to do deadlifts, or not one-legged deadlifts, where I, you know, those bird dips where I lean forward
right.
and I hold little weights mm-hmm. to stabilize myself. Well, I found that the weight that I held in my hands, I used lighter weights than I usually use because there's no reason. The weights are just there to stabilize my arms. So there's no reason to use heavy weights.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was able to use a certain weight usually, but because of this, I just used a lighter weight because it was more comfortable to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what I kept doing is I would try an exercise. I'm like, oh, nope, that's not going to happen. So I would just not do it or modify it or do something else. So the push-ups didn't happen, so I did kettlebell swings instead. And the rows, the plank rows, no way, couldn't do those. So I did more kettlebell swings. And then I have a bunch of exercises that don't involve the arm at all. So I have a bunch of core stuff that, you know, it's just putting my hands on my head or just putting my arms on the ground that doesn't involve it at all. So
mm-hmm.
So I'm injured, but there's no reason for me to stop exercising, number one. Number two, if you can stabilize the part, and move in a modified way without pain, that's a good thing to do. What's the first thing they make you do when you have surgery in the hospital?
Get up and get about.
Yes, right. Because you heal faster if you do that.
Right.
Right. So if you have inflammation, stopping, unless you're in extreme pain, that's the thing. If you're in extreme pain, if you're in pain, the pain is telling you something. You don't want to do things that are in pain. And I'm able to put this arm in a position where I have no pain. So
that's good.
I can also put my arm in a position where it hurts. So if I extend it like this, it hurts a little bit. If I move it over here, it doesn't hurt at all. So I'm going to put it in a position where it doesn't hurt. And I'm going to do physical activity so that I'm moving the part, but I'm having a minimum of pain.
Mm-hmm.
Give it some rest. And I can also continue to exercise and use parts of my body that it doesn't hurt. I'm going to see how I do on the bicycle today. Usually on the bicycle, if I'm not, I think what happened was it wasn't so much riding the bicycle. It was yanking on the handlebars.
Right.
You know, that when you're, because there was one point where it was like mile 75 or something, and I was on those stupid Cascade Hills, and there were more yucky hills. So we're not even talking about.
Was that the place with the 17% climb?
No, I was not able to ride that. No, that was a nasty walk. Walking up the hill pushing my bike was horrible. I mean, that was really bad, but that didn't affect my arm very much. No, what was worse was after that, there was still some mildly insulting hills. I did not need to walk after that. But I was getting tired and exhausted and frustrated and sad. And so
So if it's an insulting hill, when you're riding up it, does it say, "You're going awfully slow"?
No. Oh. Who would say that?
The hill. You said it was an insulting hill, so I thought maybe it was having a conversation with you.
Yeah. So, no, that's not what was happening.
No. Well, there were some people that came in from that ride that did not look very happy when they were done.
Right.
They were definitely a bit beat up on that one.
Right. It was pretty hard.
Which makes you really kind of think about, you know, if you are promoting a ride like that, maybe you might want to consider being a little more civil about it.
Yeah. Mm. No, so I was absolutely yanking on the handlebars, and I think that's what really did it. So if I do some normal bike riding and I just hold myself up, holding myself up in a position, because you're not, when you're holding yourself up on the bicycle, if you're entirely on your arms, because some people, that's what they do, and they don't have the core strength and they don't have the leg strength, they lean too much on the handlebars. And I don't tend to do that. So I'm thinking that climbing a hill on a bicycle is not going to be, it's going to be an okay thing today. And then certainly if I'm seated on the bicycle, I'm not going to be yanking on the handlebars, so I should be all right as well. But we'll see, you know. So.
Well, you know, you just got to stay out of the hills for a few days.
Well, maybe.
Right?
Maybe. I don't know if that's possible.
So let's back up. Well, around here, it's definitely not. It's very difficult to do that. Backing up, tendonitis.
Yeah.
So I talk to people and they say, oh, I had tendonitis. I ended up having to go to the doctor and getting a cortisone shot.
Yeah.
And is that the way to do this? Is there a natural way to do it without getting a cortisone shot?
Right.
What's the natural medicine perspective on this?
So let's talk a minute about tendinosis versus tendinitis. So tendinosis just means that you have dysfunction of the area, where tendinitis refers specifically to inflammation, the tumor rubra, dolor, and calor. So tendinosis means that you have an injury, your body is trying to repair the injury, and you may have a situation where you're getting scar tissue in the area. And if you're getting a bunch of scar tissue in the area, the unfortunate thing about scar tissue is not as resilient as actual muscle tissue and tendon tissue. So once you get it, if the scar tissue gets injured, it's a lot more difficult to heal. And then the area becomes more tweaky altogether.
It doesn't like to go away either, does it, the scar tissue?
It's difficult to make it go away. But what you can do, if you get scar tissue in an area, once you have reduced the inflammation and you don't have pain, you can strengthen the muscles and ligaments around it, so you can sort of circumvent that area. You can always build more muscle cells. So you build more muscle cells, and that can strengthen the area. That's why, you know, if you have a tweaky part of your body, they'll often have you exercise it once you're not in pain and once you don't have inflammation. Mm-hmm. You exercise it, you strengthen the ligaments around it, you strengthen the muscles around it, and then you can, you know. So I may have to do some physical therapy to strengthen this arm. I may have to do some specific stuff. Now would not be the time to do that. Now would be the time to ease off on him. So you get a tendinosis where the area becomes compromised. And that is that, like I said, you get this chronic scar tissue. The area is tweaky, if you will, meaning it's more susceptible to injury because the tendons are being replaced with scar tissue. So that's no good. Then when you actually have the tendinitis, of course, you have the inflammatory situation where the body is actively trying to send circulation and protein and compounds to clean up the damaged tissue and to rebuild the tissue however it can. And the unfortunate thing about inflammation is when you send inflammatory compounds around, inflammatory compounds can be damaging. So that's part of the way you get scar tissue, because they will, inflammatory compounds irritate the tissue around them. And so then your body has to compensate for the irritated tissue. So your body is doing a process of trying to rebuild. And at the same time, there's some damage going on. So chronic inflammation is not good for a part. Acute inflammation, when you are exercising a part, is actually a good thing. That's how you get, that's how you build muscle.
Right, because there's like small tears that you're actually creating in the muscles, and then they repair and they get stronger.
They repair, and you have both hypertrophy and hyperplasia.
Oh boy, here we go again.
Yes. Hypertrophy means the general growth of an organ or tissue.
Okay.
Hyperplasia means an increase in the number of cells.
Ooh.
So when you have muscle growth, you have both hypertrophy and hyperplasia. Hyperplasia is good because you build more muscle cells. So you actually are laying down more cells. That's a great thing.
So sore muscles can lead to stronger muscles.
Yes,
right.
Because your body looks at it and goes, oh, yeah? You're going to be using this muscle a lot? Well, if you're going to be using this muscle a lot, we're going to make it bigger. Not only are we going to make it swell, but we're going to put more cells in there. And that's a great thing. Why is that a great thing? Because muscle tissue is very metabolically active. It's some of the most metabolically active tissue in your body. So if you have more muscle tissue, guess what? You have less body fat. Why? Mm. Because you have more metabolism. Muscle cells are extremely...
They're hungry. They're
hungry.
Mm.
And they're metabolically active, and they do wonderful things. Like they have. So if you have more cells, you have more energy stuff in your body. You have more mitochondria. Mitochondria are awesome. Mitochondria are... They decided to move into our bodies. They evolved... They came from bacteria eons ago, and they evolved into these little power centers in all of the cells in our body, and they have wonderful things like the electron transport chain, and they have free fatty acids, and they have and they have coenzyme Q10 and carnitine and all these wonderful things, and B vitamins that make that electron transport chain go. So they're just so very metabolically active, and if you have more muscle cells, you're going to have more mitochondria, you're going to have more energy. Building muscle is a way to be less tired. So if you do resistance training, you're going to be less tired. The other cool thing about building muscle tissue is it makes cool hormones for you, like insulin-like growth factor, and it makes human growth hormone, and it makes androgens, testosterone, and DHEA for you. All things that are energizing, they give you a sex drive, and they promote metabolism. So building muscle tissue is a good thing. So now, getting back to the tendinitis.
Mm-hmm.
It's your tendinitis. You have an abnormal situation. You have a damaged tissue that needs some love.
Which you could get tendinitis by doing too much exercise.
Yes, you can. You sure can.
So you have to be cautious.
And you tend to get tendinitis in places that are prone to overuse. Like if you overuse an area, you also tend to get them in areas where the tendon gets kind of thin. So you're going to be less likely to get a tendinitis in the belly of your bicep muscle, right in the middle of your arm, although it is not impossible. You can get tendinitis anywhere, but you're more likely to get it. That's why tennis elbow and golfer's elbow are so common, because the tendon gets kind of thin when it's attaching to the bone. So it's more, it's a little more delicate there, so it's more likely to tear, especially if you're doing an overuse business there. So that's why it's not uncommon. And so you talked about a cortisone shot. So what does cortisone do? So remember the term steroid. Steroid just means, it's just a word that means that a compound has a particular ring structure in it. That's all it means. You can have catabolic steroids and you can have anabolic steroids. An anabolic steroid is just a word, just a couple of words that means that that compound builds tissue. So if you're using Roids Dude, those are designer drugs that people take that can be toxic to help build more muscle tissue. They are what we call analogs, or compounds that are like testosterone and androstenedione and other androgenic compounds to build muscle tissue. Your actual steroid hormones in your body, estrogen, testosterone, DHEA, androstenedione, those are all anabolic steroids as well. They're your own anabolic steroids that you make them in your body, and they build tissue. They are proliferative hormones. They make tissue grow. Then you have catabolic steroids. Catabolic steroids, once again, what they have in common with anabolic steroids is simply that steroid ring. It's just a structure. But a catabolic steroid is going to be your cortisol, cortisone, corticosterone. All of those compounds break tissue down. Now, why the heck would you want to have a compound in your body that breaks tissue down? Obviously, it's necessary, because it's necessary for some functions. In order to do stuff, you have to break tissue down. You have to have energy. You have to convert substance into energy so you can do things. So your adrenal hormones love to make catabolic steroids, including cortisol. Mm-hmm. And cortisone and corticosterone, right? And so it releases those hormones when you're going to go do something. So cortisol does stuff like put sugar into your blood. It also will take tissue and break it down and turn it into sugar, which it will then put into your blood. And it's going to put sugar into your blood because sugar is a fuel. You're going to use sugar to do stuff. It gets into the cells, and your body uses a fuel and breaks it down and burns it so you can do whatever it is you need to do. It gets into the cells, and you go through a pathway where it, you know, you have your insulin bonding to the cell, and the glucose gets into the cell, and then there's an energy system that works inside your cell to burn that sugar, and it turns it into energy so you could do things. Mm-hmm. And then you have... and then you have free fatty acids that will get into your cells as well. And they go into the mitochondria, and the mitochondria break those down and make them part of the electron transport chain. So cortisol and cortisone will break tissue down to make sugar. So it'll help break down whatever you got around. So first of all, if you have just sugar in your blood, it'll take sugar from stores, like from your liver glycogen, and turn it into sugar for your blood. It will also help you take fatty tissue and turn it into sugar so you can have it in your blood so you can use it for energy. It will also take fat and help you use it directly for energy. It will, if you don't have enough sugar in your blood or enough fat around, your cortisol will, whatever it sees, it will break down. So if it sees muscle tissue, it will break that down too.
That wouldn't be good, would it?
No.
No.
So if you're in a big cortisol bath all the time because you do lots of long cardio, by the way, if you do a lot of cardio exercise, you need whenever exercise you do, you're going to make cortisol. If you're mm-hmm. if the your preponderance of exercise is something that's anabolic, that is, you're doing high intensity interval training, some kind of interval training, you're doing resistance training, those are all anabolic activities. Your net result is you're going to build muscle tissue. However, you cannot exercise without having some catabolism. That is breaking down of tissue, because you have to break something down in order to do anything, right? So right. There's always catabolism going down. Now, if you do long cardio favors catabolism. So doing lots of sentry rides, you're going to be in a cortisol bath all the time. Doing lots of triathlons, you're going to be in a cortisol bath frequently. And if you do marathons, you're in a cortisol bath for a long time. That's why if you look at marathon runners, they look very skinny. They have a hard time building up muscle mass because the cortisol that they're putting out to do their run breaks down muscle tissue. So why would you inject cortisone into an inflamed part? Because it's going to break down the tissue, and it does shut down and suppress inflammation. That's, you put it in there to suppress inflammation, and it's going to feel better right away. But you know what? You can't do cortisone shots frequently because they break down tissue. So if you get cortisone shots in a part, it's going to eat away at the tissue. They're not really good for you. So my opinion is if you can avoid cortisone shots, it's a good thing. If you have no options and for whatever reason, you can't try anything else, you could do it, but let it be known that your doc is only going to do cortisone shots so many times because ultimately that tissue is going to break down. You're much better. See, I think as far as physical medicine goes, natural medicine does a really good job because there's so many things we can do. And what's unfortunate about physical medicine, when I say physical medicine, I mean whatever physical medicine you do, whether it's just slapping on some tape or doing stretches or using a foam roller or getting massage, acupuncture, physical therapy, chiropractic, craniosacral therapy. Those are all forms of physical medicine. And using electrical stimulation, my wonderful chiropractor does cold laser on me, which I can't wait till Friday because I get to go see the chiropractor. So when I go to see the chiropractor.
Cold laser.
Yeah.
What is cold laser? I mean, I think of laser, I think of heat.
Yeah, you
know,
got
you
it.
You think of like, you know, a laser beam and there's a lot of light and there's heat and all that.
Yeah.
Cold laser.
Yeah. Lasers are hot.
Is this like a cold brew?
No.
No, not like a cold brew.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, it's that time of year.
I would like a cold brew.
But anyway, I'm confused.
Okay,
what's
so
a cold laser?
So generally, when you get when you're trying to heal a part, you're going to do some combination of hot and cold, and you know, a lot of electrical stimulation therapies or ultrasound therapy, for example, imparts heat to the part. And I'm looking forward to Friday because I will probably get some ultrasound on my elbow, and I'll probably also get cold laser. So laser therapy, lasers have been so refined in years. You get, you know, those big, huge lasers that can be used as a weapon. And you could get little tiny lasers that just focus. All a laser is if you would do me a favor and look up what the acronym laser stands. Laser is an acronym. It stands for something. So please look up what that is. Laser is just a way of hyper-focusing light. That's all it is. So if you focus light at a low intensity, you could have a little pocket laser and use it as a pointer if you're giving a lecture. And you could just use it, you know, you point it at the chalkboard. It's not going to burn anything or break anything. It's just going to point to whatever you're talking about. And so you have lasers that can do something as simple as being something you could point at something. You could have fun and have little lasers that are very easy that you play laser tag with. And then you can have lasers that are more intense. They can be used as a knife, and there's surgery that's done with lasers. Then there's laser that's somewhere in between that you can point at a part that it's going to be stronger than the thing that you use as a pointer or when you play laser tag, but it's not going to be nearly as strong as when you use a laser knife for surgery. That does impart heat to a part, and you could point it at somebody's body part, and it's a form of physical therapy. So when I say cold laser, what that means, it doesn't mean actually that it's cold. It means that a laser is very, very hot. I'm not sure what the temperature of a useful laser is. But a cold laser is still going to be hot, but much, much less hot than, you know, a laser that's you're going to use as a laser knife or as a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
What does laser stand for?
Laser stands for light amplification by simulated emission of radiation.
Right. Yeah.
That's
so
it.
So they simulate. So in other words, they take a beam of light and they focus it intensely.
And the first laser was built in 1960.
So it's relatively recent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's many, many uses for lasers.
Right. It differs from other sources of light that emit light, coherently. So it's just all, it's more of a concentration of light, basically.
That's right. Yeah. So cold laser just means, it doesn't mean it's cold, because when he points the cold laser to you, you don't feel cold coming on you.
Right.
It's just that it's not as hot as a weapon or a knife.
It's not going to burn a hole in your skin.
No.
Right.
No, it's just going to heat it up, because most electrostim therapies, like if you have the electrostim with little pads, the electricity is going to impart some heat to the part. When you do ultrasound, it's going to impart some heat to the part. And cold laser will do the same thing. So so when you impart heat to a place that that needs some healing, you're going to thin the secretions there. You're going to increase circulation to the area. You're going to make it so that it's easier for all of the white blood cells that are doing the repair to do their thing. That's the purpose of doing it. So let's talk about ice for a second. I think I mentioned this a few shows ago, but let's talk about ice. You always talk about RICE, right? The RICE is the acronym, rest, ice, compression, and elevation.
Right.
Yeah. So ice is controversial.
You've been talking about this lately.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been kind of a funny thing.
So,
because I've been a big ice fan over the years, much as I hate to do it. You know, I hate the feeling of it, but at the same time, it seems to work.
Well, you may not want to ice yourself so much. So here's the thing. So yesterday when I was at work, I had a cold drink in my hand. Like I had a glass bottle that had some delicious fermented drink from the co-op in it that I was about to have a nice drink. And I pulled the bottle out and I put it against my elbow and it felt good.
Yeah.
So I think that's how that started. Somebody a long time ago figured out, ouch, this hurts. If I put snow on it or ice or cold water on it, it feels better. So it does take away the pain, because it's going to, it provides some numbness, because it does, an acute cold is going to push circulation out of that area. So it is going to acutely reduce inflammation. The problem with that is, even though it's reducing pain and it does appear to reduce the inflammation, that may not be a good thing. The other thing that happens is, remember, what do you do in the winter with your motor oil?
What do I do with my motor oil?
Well, how is your motor oil different in the winter?
Well, you have to use a thinner viscosity.
You got it, babe. Right. Why do you do that?
Because it gets cold and it gets thick and it doesn't get into the engine parts the way it needs to. It takes longer to warm up.
B-I-N-G-O, and Bingo was his name.
That was a dog. That was a song when we were kids.
I know.
You're singing a song when we were kids.
About Bingo.
Yes.
Because you've got to bang on. I'm going, you got to bang.
And you're going somewhere with this, I know.
Yes.
Because this is a Fran way of doing things.
Right. So in the summer, you can use a thicker oil because it's hot out. And it's going to get thinner anyway. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, and it's going to break down if you don't use a thicker oil.
Right. Okay. So if you slap ice on, remember, you have to increase your circulation to the area, because the circulation is what's carrying the white blood cells, the macrophages, the neutrophils, the lymphocytes, all the guys that are going to do the building and repair and cleanup. You want to get them to the area. So what do you think is going to happen if you slap ice on that puppy?
It's going to slow it down?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess that'd be a problem with
Even though it's reducing the pain and it's reducing the inflammation, it's also slowing down the process. So over-icing can be a problem. I think doing a little bit of ice because it reduces the pain is a good thing. But ultimately, if you find that ice feels good for you, I think the thing to do is alternating hot and cold. That you do hot and then cold, and you do longer hot and shorter cold. So 3 minutes hot, 30 seconds cold, alternate three times is a better plan. Especially, so I mean, if it's very acute and you want to do a little bit of ice, that might be okay, but I wouldn't do very much of it. And it might be better even to start off with alternating hot and cold. In hydrotherapy is a branch of naturopathic medicine, and we have a rule in hydrotherapy. Always end with cold, but you don't necessarily use just cold. You do end with cold, but cold, you generally do short cold. You know, at like 30 seconds, no more than 30 seconds. Like you do things like, so if you're in the sauna, you're going to jump in the tub for as long as you can stand it, which is going to be 30 seconds, and that's it. And then you get out. You know, athletes have ice baths, and they do ice baths because it reduces the inflammation. So they feel like they're going to recover faster. I don't know how good that is for them.
It really sounds like a horrible idea.
But they do it. And it reduces inflammation. But the thing is that it's going to get the inflammatory compounds out of the area. But that's because they have to get up and they have to work out the next day. It's not ideal. I mean, really, if I do an 87-mile bike ride, the best thing for me to do the next day is recover. But if you're a professional athlete, you may not have that luxury, which is why the ice baths, you know. And I'm sure that during the Tour de France, all those guys are going to be they're going to be in the ice baths at night, and that's going to be one of the things that they do. And runners do that as well, professional runners. But it's not ideal for you. So anyway, getting those cortisone shots is not ideal because it breaks down the tissue. So what do you do in natural medicine? So first of all, like I said, I'm a fan of this taping. I love tape.
Yeah, I like it too. I've had some pretty good results with it.
It's so simple. And you have relief. Again, not necessarily 100%, but in a few days you might have 100% relief, but you have some relief almost immediately.
And you have a lot of range of motion still.
Yes.
The thing that I like about it is when you use it, like if you're taping a knee, which seems to be my favorite place to tape these days.
Yeah.
If I'm taping a knee, it's like wearing a knee brace, but without the restriction.
Yes.
So, because if I wear a knee brace, if I go out, let's say I go for a bike ride, my knee has been bothering me a little bit, and I decide, well, I'm going to put the knee brace on today and go out and ride with it. Even if I use my lightest one, when I get done, I'm chafed from the brace because it digs into the back of my knee, and so that becomes a problem. But if I use the tape, nothing.
No.
Nothing. It works great.
And
I like the tape. And I like you know, the fact that you can learn a lot about it. If you do some research online, you can kind of learn the right way to do it.
Yes.
So you don't do damage to yourself because you certainly don't want to do it wrong.
And anyone can tape, unless you have an allergy to the tape or you have a skin condition that doesn't allow you to tape. It's safe. You know who can use tape? Like, say if you're in pain and there's some reason you can't take drugs, like you're pregnant, for example. If you're pregnant, you can tape yourself and there's no harm.
Right.
Right. And the other thing is you can tape any part of your body. I mean, you can tape, they have instructions. You can tape your arms, your legs, your feet. If you have plantar fasciitis, you can tape your feet. Mm-hmm. You can tape your ankles. You can tape, you know, any part of your lower extremity. You can tape your lower back, any part of your back. You can tape your neck. You can tape your shoulders. If you're on Gino or EMS team, you have to tape your tattoos. But
well, that's different story. Different story. Different reason. You know that I was just going to say. You know, call the local university athletic department and ask them how much they spend in tape every year.
Yeah.
Because every single sport uses tape.
It's just such a good thing.
And you know, I've seen, as you have too. You'll see a player injured in a game.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what game it is, but they'll go hobbling off to the bench. And pretty soon the athletic trainer is there and they're working on it and you see them pulling out the tape and they're wrapping them up and getting them all back together again. And then the athlete stands up and they kind of walk around a little bit and they nod their head yes. And next thing you know, they're back in the game.
Yeah.
So, cool. You know, tape is good stuff.
So tape, obviously, is not the only natural medicine thing we do. We really like to encourage people to go get physical medicine, whether you get massage, chiropractic, acupuncture, physical therapy, cranial sacral therapy, all of those things can be really terrific. And there's different kinds of massage. There's massage that can be gentle. There's sports massage. There's myofascial release. So there's many different kinds of massage that can be helpful. So those are all helpful and effective. And then things that you take, things that you eat. If you eat too much sugar, you can have more inflammation. So less sugar is better. Protein and essential fats are a good idea. So you want to eat stuff that's going to help you heal. So basically it's eating a good diet. And after that long bike ride, I was craving protein. So we had our burgers. We actually had our burgers the next day. And I was still in a state where that burger went down really easy. Usually the day after a ride, if I'm recovered, I'm not ready for the burger. But boy, I was ready for the burger on Monday. And I did the ride on Sunday. So I had, you know, good grass-fed beef, a good, you know, absorbable protein. You know, you can do protein shakes if you want to and whatever protein works for you, whether it's whey. I like whey protein. Good quality whey protein is probably, if you're not dairy intolerant, whey protein is probably the best one to use because it's very absorbable. Your body likes it. It's anti-inflammatory. It's very easily taken up by the muscles, and it will help with muscle repair. And it's got a really good complement of amino acids in it, including glutamine, which will help you to absorb the protein.
I find that those really long and hard efforts like you did on Sunday. I find that it takes me more than one day to recover from that. And the second day around, I'm still feeling like, you know, I can't find enough food.
Right.
And I'm still wanting to repair, you know, whatever it is I need to repair. And I tend to be a little tired and all. So I can understand why you wanted to have more protein the next day.
Makes sense.
So your body talks to you.
Sure.
Body's smarter than we are.
So I did the protein and then the essential fats, where you're going to have your good fats, your fish oil, your fish, your avocados, nuts and seeds, olives, olive oil, coconut oil, grass-fed butter. Good quality cheese, all of those things, those essential fats. You need fats to rebuild tissue, to rebuild cells, and to rebuild your hormones that you spent. So eating essential fatty acids is a really good idea, whether you take them in supplements or you eat them in food. Those are really important as well. I like to recommend glutamine. Glutamine is an amino acid that it actually helps to reduce inflammation. It helps you to be less likely to get colds and flus if you're an athlete. So but it also helps to enhance it. It helps to heal the digestive system. So it helps to support the tight junctions between the villi, the place where you absorb food in your small intestine. So because it improves those tight junctions, you're going to be able to absorb your nutrients better. So it's really nice that way. Magnesium. Magnesium is so important. Magnesium is used for so many systems in your body. It's helps blood sugar regulation. It helps to calm the muscles and the nerves. It's a nutrient that's used widely by the muscles and the nerves, and you're going to spend a lot of that when you're doing a lot of exercise. So I really like to recommend that. If you take magnesium, you'll be less likely to get your muscle cramps. And you can get magnesium just from eating produce. So eating produce, you get a lot of benefit from that. You're going to get good fiber so that your digestion and elimination is going to be better. You're going to have a good complement of probiotics, which are going to help you with your detoxification and modifying your hormones. And when you eat produce, you have antioxidants, which helps with excessive muscle damage. And you're going to get all kinds of vitamins and minerals. That in a concentrated form when you eat produce. So that's nuts, that's going to be your leafy greens, your green vegetables, and also your berries and cherries. Those are going to be the highest in antioxidants. And this time of year, it's great. It's a great time of year for berries and cherries.
Yes,
really
it is.
Really good time of year. So eating really healthfully is a good idea. Supplement-wise, also, I love curcumin. Curcumin is great. It's turmeric extract. It's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. If you're excessively sore over a couple of days, I like to hit some curcumin. If your stomach can tolerate boswellia, which is frankincense, that can help too. Bromelain as well. Proteolytic enzymes like bromelain can be helpful as well. There's a bunch of things that we do. And then topically, there's things that we do. So if you're really sore and you just want to not feel sore, you can take an Epsom salt bath. Epsom salt baths are great because it's just magnesium sulfate. And I think what's going on with the magnesium sulfate, the reason that you feel so good is not so much that you're absorbing it and all of a sudden it's getting deep inside your body and you're healed. It's that you have nerves, you have pain sensors on the surface of your skin. And the magnesium is in solution in the water. It hits the nerves on the surface of your skin. And it relaxes them right away. So your nervous system talks to the rest of your nervous system. So if you have some lovely relaxation going on the surface of your skin, it's going to send a signal through the rest of your body. And so you get in an Epsom salt bath, you feel better almost, again, not 100%, but you can feel a lot better almost instantly.
It's like drawing it out of you.
It's kind of doing that, but I don't know how much that's going to happen over time. But the reason you feel good as soon as you get in is because the magnesium is hitting the nerves in your skin and it's relaxing those nerves, which is then sending a signal to the rest of your nervous system to calm down.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that's what's... So Epsom salt baths are great. And yeah, if you sit in an osmotic solution long enough, you're going to draw some inflammatory compounds out through your skin. And you're also going to draw some... Because you're going to draw some fluid out through your skin. And whatever inflammatory compounds are in your body are going to come out. And then you're going to want to replace that with clean water. You know, so you make sure after you do an Epsom salt bath, you drink, and preferably water. So topicals... So there's different topicals. So then there's esterified fatty acids. Esterified fatty acids are interesting because they're an extract of beef fat, and they can help to rebuild tissue. And you can take esterified fatty acids to help rebuild discs and joints and stuff. And you can also use it topically. And esterified fatty acids topically are usually pretty nice. You know, sometimes I want to use that. Sometimes I want to use other stuff. So that's something you can get. You can get EFAT cream, esterified fatty acid cream. You can put that on topically to the part that hurts. Then there are also the mixed homeopathic cream, gels and creams and stuff. They have mixed homeopathics. There's different brands that you can get, and some work better than others. And they're going to have homeopathic, low-potency homeopathic versions of things like arnica. Now, people will tend to have arnica as a go-to. Arnica is great. But arnica is very specific. Arnica is good if you have a sensation of bruising, if you lie down and your back feels better lying down. Also, arnica is interesting. It has a mental state. The mental state is, no, I'm fine. If you're like, all right, I'm sore, but I'm going to go back and exercise, use some arnica. But arnica is for bruising and soreness, and it can reduce bruising and that feeling of that bruised sensation. But it's not the only herb that you may want to use. And if you're just using arnica, you may be that may be short-sighted because there's other herbs that are helpful. So rutagraviolins, if you're having issues with tendons or ligaments, you probably want to use some rutagraviolins. And so a lot of these, some of the combination ones will have several different homeopathics in them. So rutagraviolins is a really good one. Dandelion and daisy. They're both in the same family. They're both in the aster family, and they are both
and
really good for trauma.
Too.
All of them, they're really good for trauma, and they're good mixed in with those mixed homeopathic preparations. And Rhus toxicodendron, guess what that is? Is poison ivy. You would never use poison.
I don't think you want to rub yourself with poison ivy.
No, not in a material dose. Absolutely not. Where arnica, you would put rust tox in an arnica. You wouldn't put herbal rust tox in an herbal arnica salve. You can use herbal arnica, just an arnica oil that's not homeopathic. It's no problem. But you obviously cannot use rust tox oil because you will get poison ivy.
That'd be a very bad idea.
Yes. So, but you can use, but homeopathically it's wonderful. So when you use it homeopathically, you're using a diluted potentized dose of it, so you're not going to get a rash. And the indications for rust tox are very common. They're very common complaints that you get stiff from sitting too long, better with first motion and worse with continued motion. It's classic osteoarthritis. So it's a really good thing to have in a homeopathic preparation, homeopathic rust tox. So there's and then chamomile is another one that they'll throw in. Chamomile is good for pain, of course. And passion flower is another one. It's a nervine that's calming to nerves. It's a nervine that's coming to nerves. I think that's redundant.
Might be.
So you can use these things topically. If you want to, you can use curcumin topically. Of course, curcumin topically, is extract of turmeric. It's yellow, so
it's going to stain you. Yeah.
But you can use.
Then you could look like Donald Trump.
Yeah, but if you put it in oil and you want to put it on a part that's sore, you can do that. You just get a little yellow. That's all. So those are all really helpful things. And the other thing is. Rest. That you don't want to rest apart 100%. You want to do range of motion as much as your part will allow you, but you do want to also get rest. Rest the part as much as you need to, and don't do the aggravating activity.
And if you go to the Arthritis Foundation and you look up tendonitis, it gives you all sorts of information here, and all the things that you went through are covered here. Rest and splints, hot and cold therapy, over-the-counter prescription medicines, steroids, physical therapy, occupational therapy, all these different things.
Yep. Yeah, occupational. So, I didn't talk about occupational therapy. So occupational therapy is not exactly the same as physical therapy. Physical therapy is you're specifically doing exercises directed at the part. Occupational therapy is how to modify your actual activities of daily living based on the injury that you have or
so
based on the condition.
So if you're swinging a hammer all day long and you have tendonitis, then you need to figure out another thing to do.
Right, or a way to modify the hammer swinging so that you're not aggravating the part if you can swing the hammer at all.
Or get one of those hammers that you just squeeze the trigger.
We're going to find out if I can. Right, that would be a thing to do
that's
as well.
Another
but that's
solution.
What occupational therapy is. It's how you, given a condition that you may have, how to accommodate you in whatever your activities of daily living are. And that's a very useful therapy as well. So we went through tendonitis, and this was a good tendonitis review and how to help yourself with injuries here on Radio Naturopath. Remember, if you ever have anything to contribute, you can call us. The number to call is 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can write us at radionaturopath@gmail.com, and you can text us at 860-486-9487. So it's really beautiful out there. I think this time of year, I just want to let you know there's some really great produce that's available right now. The arugula is good. It's really spicy.
Oh, everything is good right now.
Yes.
Everything is just growing like crazy.
Good greens, good cherries, good berries. The blueberries are coming from New Jersey. The blueberries can be picked locally now. Shout out to Donna Dufresne. Yes, Windsong Farms is open over out in Pomfret.
Oh, they are?
Yes.
Nice.
I just got notified about that.
And the wild raspberries are growing right next to our house.
Right next to our house. So if you have some power lines, or if you have a distressed plot of land and some acidic soil, you can go looking for the wild berries.
Seems like they
so
like
that's
that.
That's happening. They do. Well, they like acidic soil. So
yeah.
Yeah. So that's what's going on. All right. So you've been listening to 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, and this has been Radio Naturopath. And we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath. And it will have been the 4th of July. So we'll talk about our 4th of July weekend. That'll be
fun. Right. And exciting. Boombox parade and all.
Yeah. So we'll have had the Boombox parade. And that's going to be a good time. So if you're planning on going to the Boombox parade in Willimantic, it starts at 11 o'clock? Or is
I believe
it 10 o'clock?
Yeah. Well, I think you line up at 10 and it starts at 11. But I'd have to double check that to be sure.
Right. But you can go stand in downtown Willimantic. It's always a good time. We'll be marching. We're going to be supporting the Steeplechase Bicycle Tour. Mm-hmm. And you'll get to meet my little nephews who will be marching and riding in the parade. It'll be exciting.
We hope.
So we'll see you. So we'll be back next week on the 6th of July. So have a wonderful 4th of July weekend. Have a good celebration. Hope you get to see some fireworks. And we'll be back next week with more Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM.